Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 10 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. This is program 231 in the series. It's November 11th, and to my right, the very vivacious Lisa Wolf. And how you doing, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
In the booth, we have Kassara Heining, and she's also known as DJ Cash.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
What's going on, DJ?
We love her. We're
yes,
so happy to have you tonight.
We do. And you know what?
And tomorrow night.
Yeah, both nights. That's right. We have a really good lineup. Arch Obler's Plays from 1945. Then it's Escape. And then Dragnet. So great, great shows. And then tomorrow, you know what we have tomorrow, Lisa?
I sure do.
Burns and Allen, Boston Blackie, and what else?
The Hall of Fantasy.
Very, very good. All right. It's all brought to you by Cats Pride.
It's time for Celebrity School, brought to you by Cats Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming film Soldado, a follow-up to the 2015 film Sicario about the escalating war against drugs.
All right, what do they win?
They are going to win a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's.
Nice. 312. 981-7200, 312-981-7200 is the number. Here's a hint. This actor played George Bush in W.
Iran is not Iraq, and Iraq is not Iran. I know that.
Yeah, all right.
Nothing to it.
All right, give us a call if you know who that actor is.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Iran is not Iraq, and Iraq is not Iran. I know that.
Hey, Dakota, how are you?
Oh,
where's Dakota?
There she is.
There we go. Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. We're glad you called in, and we're guessing you know who that actor is.
Yes, it's Josh Brolin.
You are right. Josh Brolin is the right answer. And you know what you won, Dakota? My very favorite pizza. It's Lou Malnati's. You have a gift certificate for $25. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Of course, spinach is our choice, Carl,
yeah,
for Carl and me. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumelnatis.com. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hey, Dakota, you know what?
What?
Lisa asked you, do you know what you want? And then she told you what you want.
I did.
Yeah, she didn't even ask.
Okay.
I know you knew the right answer, so it's all good. You wouldn't have called in if you didn't love pizza.
Nice. All right, well, thanks. You're a big winner, Dakota.
Thank you. You guys have a good night.
All right,
take
you
care.
Too. All right, and all of our listeners are big winners, too. Hey, you know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
I've decided to start putting two of our classic radio collections on sale every month. So in November, we have the Cinnamon Bear and also Classic Radio Suspense Volume 1. Are available at ClassicRadioStore.com. We have two collections. Well, there's actually many, many collections at ClassicRadioStore.com that you can digitally download. They're normally $19.99 for 12 half-hour classic radio shows. But during the month of November, you can order the complete collection of The Cinnamon Bear for only $9.99, half price. Also, Suspense Volume 1 at $9.99. And in Suspense Volume 1, you'll hear episodes starring Bela Lugosi, Orson Welles, Mary Astor, Paul Lucas, and many others. Just visit ClassicRadioStore.com. Get The Cinnamon Bear, normally $19.99, for half price, only $9.99. And Suspense Volume 1, normally $19.99, for only $9.99.
And if you weren't listening to anything that Carl just said and you just decided to tune out, we have all the information posted right on the top of our Facebook page.
Oh, wow, great.
So go to WGN Radio Theater on Facebook or right at the top of the page, you can check it out.
Or just log on to ClassicRadioStore.com. And in fact, when you do go there, ClassicRadioStore.com, we give you a free download of Suspense on a Country Road, which was the very first radio show that I ever heard. I was 12 years old.
And I know Dave Player played that one a couple weeks ago.
It's probably the best. It's one of the best suspense stories of all time. Cary Grant stars in it. We offer that to all of our listeners free. Just go to ClassicRadioStore.com. And pick up the Cinnamon Bear and Suspense Volume 1 at half price during the month of November. All right, Lisa, are you ready for Arch Obler's Plays?
Yeah, this is a good one.
Oh, yeah. Arch Obler's Plays was a drama series, and Arch Obler was considered by many critics to be radio's top literary genius. He gained great fame as a writer, producer, director of Lights Out in the 1930s and 40s. And then in 1939, NBC offered him Arch Obler's Plays, where he used many of the dramas that he had written for other radio shows and kind of redid them on this show. And top stars appeared on it, Ingrid Bergman, Ronald Coleman, Orson Welles, Joan Crawford, Burgess Meredith, to name a few. It lasted one season but was revived 5 years later on Mutual. This is a Mutual broadcast from September 6, 1945. It's called Mirage, and it stars Raymond Edward Johnson along with Joan Blaine. Here's Arch Obler's Plays.
Mutual presents Arch Obler's Plays. The Mutual Broadcasting System has the pleasure of presenting a special 26-week series of plays by radio playwright Arch Obler. In this series, we hope to bring you dramas full of the excitement and the meaning of plays told in relation to the expanding world in which we live. Tonight's play, especially transcribed for Don Lee listeners, is titled Mirage.
Linda!
Yes, Carl?
I've been looking for you.
And I for you.
Look, Linda, this party, it's getting a little too much for me. It's a great night. How about a little walk on the beach?
Yes? All right. But quickly, before someone changes my mind.
Get her there?
No. I'll let the moonlight keep me warm.
Now that air is good.
Careful. Night air.
You know, I never could understand the hunters. They build this place here on the shore, and then when they give a party, they seal the windows hermetically. Here, down this path.
Yes.
Boy, that breeze off the sea is good. Don't you think so?
Frankly, Carl, I didn't come out here for the air. I've been very anxious to talk to you. Very.
That's flattering.
It won't be when you hear why I want to talk to you. Carl, I've always liked you.
And I you.
Liking you, I've tried to understand you as you are, but must you be so antisocial?
Antisocial? Me?
The Ransalis had a dinner party last night.
Oh, that. The office. I couldn't break away.
The Carters were expecting you the night before last at the theater.
Linda, I'm a businessman.
Why, you can't disappoint people continually and expect them to have any regard for you.
My friends know I'm a busy man.
You and I belong to a set that demands certain social obligations from us.
I wonder if you know how pompous that sounds.
Pompous or not, it's the truth. Paul, you can't just ignore social obligations.
I'm here, am I not? Ocean's rather calm, isn't it?
They were talking about you only last week at the Pages.
Pages? Say, J.B. made a good thing out of International Motors last week. Must have cleaned up a quarter of a million.
Someone mentioned your name, and this other person laughed and said, don't invite him unless you let him bring his stock ticket.
Idea in that.
I hear the same about you wherever I go, Carl. There isn't a man I know who spends as much time at work as you do.
If that's what I want, why shouldn't I?
Carl, understand me. I appreciate the importance of money. After all, you could find time for your friends. Why do you laugh?
I just remembered why I wanted to be alone with you.
Well?
I was going to lecture you. Lecture? Really, I was. I was going to tell you that you've been burning the social candle at both ends, or words to that effect.
Really?
You are, you know. Bazaars and style shows and all that nonsense. But you took the offensive, so I forgot what I wanted to say. And that reminds
You're remembering a great many things, aren't you?
Yep. One of the things was to tell you that you're looking very lovely tonight.
The man's human.
You're irritated with me, aren't you?
I am. Carl, you could be an utterly charming man if you'd forget your stocks and bonds and debentures and all the rest of that for a while and start enjoying life.
Linda, now you've got me irritated just because my idea of living doesn't include a room full of jabbering idiots.
I think we'd better go back.
Now, wait a minute. Linda... Ah, Linda, let's call a truce on this. After all, we're a couple of mature people. Let's act maturely and leave each other alone and enjoy the night. How about it?
You're hopeless. All right.
Good. We'll get off on safe subjects. The sea, the weather, the moon, June, the number of days to Christmas.
Exactly.
We'll start with the sea. Calm, isn't it?
Don't walk so fast, Carl. Please.
Oh, I forgot. The sand must be ruining your slippers.
No. Beach is packed so hard, I'm quite all right. Just don't walk too fast.
Right. Fine place the hunters have here.
They do have successful parties.
Hunter bought this place right before 29. Tried to unload it all through the Depression. Couldn't get even enough to cover the land value.
Did you hear about Ivy's debut? Margaret naturally wanted to have it at Claremont, but Tom insisted on their country place.
Oh, poor Tom. Dropped plenty in that amalgamated merger. Amazing man of his experience not knowing that you can't disturb the capital investment of an organization.
Now, just a minute, Mr. Lott. If you're thinking of starting on capital investments again, I'd better remind you that this conversation is limited to, remember? June, moon.
What moon?
Of all the inconsiderate clouds I ever... Carl, what are you staring at?
I can't quite make out. Do you see anything down there?
Hmm?
Near the water's edge?
Why? Oh, yes. Yes, there is something there.
It's so dark.
Carl, it moved.
I saw.
Is it a dog?
I'm not sure.
Let's go closer.
No, no, Linda, wait. Linda, come back.
Carl, come quickly.
What is it?
Someone's sitting on the sand.
Well, who in the world?
The drunk. Just someone who lost his way to the bar. Come on.
Oh, Linda, wait.
Wait for what?
I better see who it is and give him a hand.
All right. If you must play the Good Samaritan, go ahead.
I say there, fella.
What in the world is a drunken fool doing? Digging for clams?
I have to get closer. I say there, old boy. Going to get a little wet there when the tide comes in, aren't you?
Well, drunk and dumb.
I guess you're right.
Let's go on.
No, 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 wait, please.
What?
The moon will be out in a minute. I want to see what he's doing. Ah, there. Now we'll... Why, it's an old man.
Writing in sand.
What are you doing here?
Guess he just... Won't talk.
Well, how do you like that? Writing in the sand with the point of his finger.
Carl, I don't like this at all. Come away.
What is it?
Nothing. Nothing at all. If this old man wants to sit here in the dark in the sand, let him. Why does it concern us?
But what's he writing? I can't quite make out. Oh, the moon went under.
Carl, are you staying here?
Well, I'm sorry. I want to see what the man's writing. What are you writing, old man? Old man, don't you hear me talking to you?
Carl, you're being insufferable.
Linda, where's your curiosity? A deserted beach after midnight, an old man writing heaven knows what in the sand? Aren't you interested in knowing?
I'm not interested in maniacs. Who else but a psychopathic would sit
Linda,
here?
Linda, wait. The moon's coming through the clouds again. Now we'll see. You see it too? He's writing names in the sand. Names of people.
Carl.
What is it, Linda?
His face.
What did you say?
Face. Did you see his face?
No, no, I didn't see it. Linda, what's the matter?
His face.
What about his face? Oh, those blasted clouds, I can't see. Ah, light again. Well, there's nothing wrong with his face.
I thought...
Well, he's just an old man. Must be a gardener, writing names in the sand.
I want to know who he is.
Well, now you're curious.
I want to know who he is, Carl.
And I'm certainly going to find out. Old man, we insist on knowing who you are. Do you hear me, old man? We insist. No attention. Must be deaf.
Clouds covering the moon. The sea so green. Carl, I'm cold. Let's go in.
No, if that isn't like a woman. One minute you're curious and the next minute you're cold. Ah, the moon's bright now. I can look. Now look. You can see some of the names he's writing. John Barclay, March 2nd, 1941. Well, how do you like that? He wiped the name out, and he's writing another one.
James Ellison, March 2nd, 1942.
Wipe that out. Writing another one.
Name after name.
But why? Old man, can you hear me? Why?
What would he say?
Well, he's certainly not drunk. Eyes so bright, so intent on his work. And what work?
Carl, don't laugh.
What? What'd you just say?
He seems so busy.
Linda, what is there about this old man that disturbs you? I think he's funny.
Carl.
A dirty little unshaven old man crouched over writing names in the sand with the point of his finger. That's a serious career, isn't it?
Carl, no.
A career for one's old age. No overhead, no competition, no profit. Sit in the open air and write in the sands of time. Linda, I tell you, when I get too old for Wall Street, I think I'll join this old man.
Carl.
Huh?
C-A-R. Look. Your name.
Hmm?
He's writing your name.
Well, what do you know of
the... C-A-R...
Well, the old fraud can hear.
Carl.
He must have overheard you say my name.
Carl. Your last name. He's writing that, too.
But that's impossible. He doesn't
know.
He
is writing it. L-A...
My name.
You?
He doesn't know who I am.
G? Oh, how slowly he forms each letter.
How does he know? Why does he write?
What is it?
I don't know. I feel sick.
Carl.
Don't let me fall.
Old man. Old man, help me. Oh, please help me.
He's...
My friend.
He's finishing.
He's ill.
My name. I can't breathe.
Carl, I can't hold you up. Help me. Please, someone, please help me.
All right, Lisa, that's the first portion of Arch Obler's plays with Mirage. We'll get back to that in just a few moments.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, David Jennings. And you know what, Lisa?
What?
You just said this to me today. We were driving in, and Lisa gave me a call, and she said that...
You called me, though, just if we're going to be clear.
Somebody in Los Angeles, right,
yes,
listens to our show, and she must listen on the internet, right?
I don't know.
She probably doesn't hear the signal, even though this signal does go really far.
I don't know.
She listens on the internet. But she listens on Saturday nights only. She probably doesn't know that we're also on Sunday nights.
It's possible.
And I'll bet you some of the people that listen on Sunday don't realize we're on Saturday night.
Well, they wouldn't be listening right now then, would
they? This is true. Folks, we are on Saturday and Sunday, and it's different shows. We play
not
six.
The same thing?
Yeah, it's not the same show.
We're
we don't repeat.
Same. We don't even have the same conversations each night.
No, it's all live. We don't repeat our Saturday show on Sunday, so make sure you're with us both nights.
And just a quick mention, I was just checking our Facebook. We did post a picture of Arch Obler on there, so you can check that out. But also, I noticed that we have 2,499 likes. We are one like away from 2,500, which is sort of a benchmark on Facebook. So.
Yeah.
Make sure if you haven't liked us on Facebook, please do. We would appreciate that.
Oh, let's see.
I don't know if I liked you guys yet. Let me see.
We'll keep working on you.
let's have a goal for the end of the night.
Okay.
All right, so we're at $24.99. Let's have a goal of
2,600.
No, that's a lot.
100 people out there?
With 100 of our listeners do that for us?
I think
that'd
they
be amazing.
Would. I think All right. we've got great
I say
listeners.
It'll be under 2,600 by
so
the end
I.
of the night. and you're hoping it'll be over 2,600.
I'm hoping, but I'm with you on
All
that.
Right.
See what we can do, you guys.
All right, let's get back now to this episode of Mirage on Arch Obler's Plays.
Oh, I'm standing up again.
I feel all right.
What happened? Oh, why did you frighten me so?
My name. In the sand. Where?
The surf. It came in, wiped it out before he'd finished.
Old man, why did you write my name? How did you know who I was? Answer me, why did you write my name?
What difference does that make? You're ill. Let's get back to the house.
No, I feel fine. Sudden dizziness, but I'm all right. I want to know how and why this...
He's writing again.
Hmm? L. I. N. Your name.
Yes.
D. A.
Carl, take me home.
Wait. He can't possibly know your last name. J. E. F. He does know it.
Carl, please, I don't...
F. E. R. Oh. Writing so slowly, as if he wasn't quite sure. But he does know it. Linda, how in the world do you imagine he knows... Linda.
Carl, help me.
Linda, what is it?
Hold me.
Yes. Yes, I'm holding you. Linda, in heaven's name, what is it?
My heart. Falling.
Linda.
Falling.
Linda! Linda!
Oh. Why are you holding me?
Well, you were ill. Fainting.
I? What are you talking about?
Are you joking?
What is that a joke about? Please let go of me.
All right.
Oh, yes. My name. He was writing my name.
Yes.
Where is it? The sand. He's writing another name. Where's mine?
That... wave must have washed it out before it finished.
Oh, I remember now. My heart. I couldn't see. Darkness. I was falling.
Yes. Falling.
Your face so white. Carl, why?
As he wrote my name, I felt as if I were dying. And then you. You felt that way too as he wrote your name, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
How cold it is here.
Cold.
He's still writing.
Oh, no.
The moon. Gone.
Carl, stay by me.
Yes.
He's still there.
Darker.
In the darkness. I can't stand it.
anymore. Oh, Ben, who are you?
Oh. Linda, Linda, stay away from him. Don't.
No.
Linda. Linda, what is it?
No one.
What?
No one here.
But he was here. I saw him.
Carl, find him. Find him and talk to him. I've got to know. I've got to know.
Old man. Where are you, old man?
There he is. There. Far down the beach.
We've got to catch him. Come. Old man. Wait. Old man.
Old man, wait. I beg you.
Old man, wait. I want to talk to you. No.
I thought...
There he is.
Where?
The other way at the edge of the water. Old man. Wait. Wait, old man.
Wait for me, Carl. Wait. 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 Why did you stop?
No one. I thought I saw. But there's no one. If only the moon came out again.
Find him for me, Carl. Find him for me.
You blasted moon, come out, come out.
Old man.
Linda.
I heard.
What? Linda.
You laugh?
Yes. Yes, of course I'm laughing. What we just heard, the wind. Our friends back at the house.
Friends?
Yes, friends, friends. That wind and the sound of them talking, it cleared my head. I must have been out of my head all this time. And you too, Linda.
Our friends?
Yes, 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 our friends. Back there, only a few hundred feet from here. Lights and music and reality.
This hasn't been reality.
Linda, all my life I've been a practical man. My life has been like my business. Everything has had debits and credits. This that's been happening to us... My head's clear now. I can think of it in practical terms.
Tell me.
We met an old man. Writing in the sand.
He wrote my name.
And mine, too. All that was real enough. Now then, how does he know our name?
Yes.
Simple enough. You and I are not unknown. He must have been an old gardener on the estate here. Yes. Yes, that's it. He heard of us and then heard us call each other by our given names. And so he knew the rest of
it. But when he wrote our names, we...
Yes, yes. I know. The dizziness. It's all quite easily explained. Back in the house, the air was bad. We came outside, both of us nerves on edge, too much fresh air, dizziness followed. Oh, why talk about it anymore? Let's go back to the house.
Yes, Carl. Yes, quickly.
Now, careful, not so fast you'll fall.
I'm all right. Faster, Carl. I want to get back.
A drink, that's what I need, a drink. Two or three, a dozen.
So very dark.
Infernal clouds. Let's stay along the water's edge, easier to walk.
Yes.
A fantasy in the night, that's all it was. We let our imaginations run away with us. Imagine things that didn't exist.
Oh.
Why do you stop?
Oh, God.
Why are you pointing?
He's writing again. He's there, writing again.
Old man. Old man!
Carl, don't leave me. It's so dark. Carl!
Gone again. Gone again.
Take me back to the house. Quickly. Oh, quickly, don't stand there. We'll run, we'll...
Wait, wait. The moon. Shining down so strangely. Everything so strange.
So strange?
Yes.
Carl. At the edge of the water.
What?
Our names.
Our?
Names. Our names in the sand. See them?
Yes.
There's a deep... Written after my name.
And after mine.
I can't see the deep. What?
A wave. It's coming. Linda, come back.
No, I've got to see.
Linda!
I saw.
I did. Too.
The date when I...
The date when I...
Oh, no.
No. No, it isn't true. It isn't. It isn't. A date written in the sand, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't. It doesn't. Does it, Linda?
I didn't think it would be so soon.
You
believe?
Yes.
I do too, somehow.
But so soon.
No, I won't believe. I won't. I'm going to live a long time, 50, 60 more years. My family, they lived long lives. My father, my grandfather, this can't be true.
Carl, don't be so afraid.
You're not.
Oh, I am. And yet, somehow it's wonderful.
Wonderful?
Yes, wonderful. What every person in the world wants to know, we know. You and I.
It'll be spring that year. When I...
No, don't think of it that way. The wonder of it, Carl. Think of that.
I never thought much about the wonder of things.
How good the air is. Like wine. I've heard them call it that. I never believed a breath could be so wonderful.
If a man planned every minute that was left, how much he could do...
That's why I say it's wonderful, Carl. I know what I have left. I can plan the days, the hours, live each one because I know just how many of them I have. Carl. Oh, Carl. I'm almost happy now.
Happy?
Yes. Yes, why not? Now I'll do the things I wanted to do. Yes. Everyone. Listen to them back there. I never really wanted that car.
But you always...
Because that was the path my mother had gone. The one she led me to. But all the time, the snobbery of money. Those silly little family destinies. I wasn't happy because it wasn't what I really wanted. I knew that. But I went on because always there was a tomorrow. I said to myself, tomorrow, some new tomorrow, I'll start the life I want. I didn't know. Now I know my tomorrows. Oh, Carl, I've got to start now. And so I will. And so I'm happy.
What?
A child, Carl. Yes. I want a child. There. I've said what I never thought to say. How I used to laugh at people with their children. Such clever, brittle talk. And all the time, my heart was in my eyes. A child. Listen. On the wind.
Yes.
It's the music of the night, Carl. Oh, look up. The stars are singing. They know I'm free. For a little while, I'm free. And you, Carl? What will you do?
I? What will I do?
Yes. What will you do tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow morning. I'll go back to my business, of course. My business. No. No.
Why, you're holding me.
Yes, Linda. Linda, you and I, we've got to be together.
Oh, Carl.
You're right. There can be happiness in it. Well, these days and months were free. I have never been free, have I? The cage of my business, money. I am free now. Yes, I am. Travel, Linda, you and I. The world. We'll climb up to these singing stars of yours. When I was a boy, I always thought I'd do that. Travel. Travel. Free. This little world, all of it, mine to know and have. I thought there was plenty of time to start. Tomorrow, there's always be a tomorrow for me. Yes, I was immortal. I thought that, really. We do. Most of us do, don't we? Everybody else in the world would live their lives and die, but I, always inside of myself, I thought I'd live forever. And so I climbed into a cage and stayed there.
You're holding me so close.
You and I, Linda, together, free, until that day. Say it. Say it.
Oh, my dear. Why did it take death to teach us how to live?
You have just heard Miss Joan Lane and Mr. Raymond Edward Johnson in Arch Obler's play, Mirage. Next week at the same time, Mutual Don Lee will bring you the next play of the series. It is titled Profits Unlimited. The program notes state, this is a play about a future that should never happen. It is not about another war or atomic bombs, but about people and a strange inheritance. This will be the next in a special series of plays written, directed, and produced for Mutual Don Lee by Arch Obler. Tonight's play by Arch Obler was transcribed. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
That's Arch Obler's plays, September 6, 1945, with Mirage, starring Joan Blaine and Raymond Edward Johnson, as heard on Mutual. Man-eater. That's Lisa. She's a man-eater.
Excuse me?
Right?
Inappropriate.
What?
That's an inappropriate thing to say to me.
This is your song, Maneater.
No, it's not my
Paul
song.
Paula Oates, right? Hey, not bad, right?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
DJ Cash.
That was good.
She could play the music. Hey, I know. You know, you used to love him and leave him in high school. I know. I know you,
no,
Lisa.
No, I was too shy in high school. Yeah. I wasn't quite there yet.
You were like a serial dater.
No, I was not.
Love him and leave him.
No,
date
I
him
was
for
shy.
2 months and then
no.
They, all of a sudden you'd be dating somebody
You're
else.
You're talking about somebody
I'm
else.
I'm telling
I
you.
Think he's talking about himself.
I
he's
think
a
so,
man.
Too.
I'm sure that he's I'm somebody
man.
Else.
He's a man-eater.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, you're the man-eater, Carl.
Yeah,
there
right.
you go.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. Whatever you say. Okay.
I just love watching you walk into a wall. It's so much
yeah,
fun.
You know what? That actually hurt. I mean,
his nose gets in the way.
My forehead. Cracked my forehead.
Oh, Carl, you can't win. You've got two women.
I know.
Stop.
I need some help,
give,
man.
No, you don't. You just need to give up.
Yeah, just give up.
Surrender gracefully.
Yeah. All right. I guess that's probably...
You'll be fine.
Okay, that's what I'll do. Good advice. Good advice, Dave. All right, in this hour, Maneater, we're going to be listening to Escape, starring Larry Dobkin, and it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity School, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming film The First Man about the space
eater.
I'm trying not to laugh and you're ruining me. About the space mission that led Neil Armstrong to become the first man to walk on the moon.
All right.
And the winner is going to get a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
Very nice. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor starred in La La Land.
City of stars, are you shining just for me?
This is so not a Carl movie. It's just way too
you know
sweet
what?
And
if
romantic.
If someone wanted to torture me, they would take toothpicks and
put them in your eyes.
Keep my eyelids open.
And take you to see La La Land.
And watch La La Land. Yeah.
Well, you are in the minority,
hey,
like, mister.
Nick DiGilio loved it.
I know.
Remember,
he
and I had that whole verbal sparring that time about La La Land.
Although you didn't see it, right?
No, I
didn't. But it's just the concept.
Nor would I ever.
It's just not for you,
right.
Which is, you know, that's the way it is.
That's right. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. Who is that actor?
We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
City of stars. Are you shining? shining just for me.
Carl, your favorite movie. You know, nothing against La La Land. You're just not a musical theater kind of a guy.
Yeah.
Right? Nothing against this particular movie, but we had a winner.
I like the actors in it.
Yeah, so did I. Mm-hmm. We had a winner because Sarah took a winner, and what was it, Mario? Mario. Okay, so she won, and she
knew Mariel Hemingway?
Mariel. Oh. Okay.
Mariel Hemingway listens to the show.
That must be her. I think that was her.
All
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And Mariel knew that the answer was Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
So congratulations to her. She's won the Twilight Zone 4 CD set. And, you know, I like...
Sarah, people think I look a lot like Ryan Gosling.
What do you think?
Didn't you
what
say that they think you look like some other actor
George
last
Clooney,
time I was
he
here?
Said George yeah. Clooney.
I get
I
it a lot.
Said.
People are like,
oh, yeah, right.
You look so much like Ryan Gosling. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some of us, it's just
some
the cross
people,
I have to bear.
Some people say you do, and then some people probably say you don't.
Yeah, but some, right. Some people do say I do.
Right.
So,
you could probably
and this
find
is radio,
somebody.
So
let's go
I could look
that.
Like whoever on radio. It's the theater of the mind. Right?
Right.
She's just,
right.
She's looking at
yeah.
me.
Yeah. Just stick
you know,
to radio.
Luckily,
don't,
we have
don't
a Facebook page.
Not going to try television.
Yeah,
right.
We have a Facebook page. And if
I'm
anybody
too tall for television.
Wants to know what you look like, they can check you out on Facebook.
Right.
We've only got 9 likes today, so we
what?
Are way off from our 100 mark.
Oh,
Casero
man.
Was one
that's
of them,
it?
So that's really like 8.
Come on,
hey,
folks.
Well, I think my like still counts.
It counts as 1, but well, we're supposed to get to 2,600.
Come on, folks. Go to WGN.
Radio Theater.
Radio Theater Facebook page and like us.
Also, you can check out the photos that we have posted there. We have one from Escape. We have one from Arch Obler. And we're going to post a little Facebook Live video in a little while.
We are?
Yeah. So
okay.
That's always a lot of fun to watch.
Well,
so make sure to check it out.
In this hour, it's Escape, and it's time for that. Radio's greatest series of high adventure came to radio in 1947, lasted 7 seasons. And what I love about Escape, it was a lot like Suspense. It really was on the same level of Suspense, except it didn't have the big name stars. You know, Suspense every week pretty much had a movie star. Suspense used supporting actors like William Conrad and John Daner, Ben Wright, Harry Bartell, Paul Frees. These were the actors always every week. But they had amazing writers and amazing directors. Quality was great. And we have an episode for you now from August 23rd, 1953. This is called The Man from Tomorrow. It stars Larry Dobkin. Here's part 1 of Escape.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are the subject of an experiment. An experiment to make you the most powerful man on Earth. While if it succeeds, from that moment, you will be forever locked in a world from which there can be no escape.
So listen now as Escape brings you Irving Reese's extraordinary story, The Man from Tomorrow.
Started with a want ad in the daily paper. Wanted ex-fighter pilot must be in perfect health and prepared for rigid tests. Successful candidate will receive good pay and will be given opportunity to contribute to daring experiment and world betterment. Science Associates, 126 West Street. 126 West Street turned out to be one of those ultra-modern, super-scientific buildings. No windows, and air-conditioned as cool as a north wind off an iceberg. About 60 guys had answered the ad.
Hi, Major.
Hi, Randy.
Been a long time.
Yeah. Some of the faces were familiar, guys that had been in my fighter wing. We sat there, 60 of us, and waited. An hour. 2 hours. Nothing happened.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm getting out of here. This place gives me claustrophobia. It's locked. We're locked in here.
And even before this had a chance to sink in, another door opened on the far side of the room. A guy with a white mask on his face came in carrying a Thompson submachine gun.
Hey! Hey!
They all flattened on the floor except me. I made a dash for the man in the mask, but he disappeared as quickly as he'd come.
How come you didn't hit the floor, Dick? You tired of living?
He was shooting blanks. Couldn't you see? Weren't any bullets chipping anything? That was a gag.
I don't like this. Come on, let's crash the door and get out of this rat trap.
Save it, Randy. It won't do any good. They can keep us bottled up till they're good and ready to let us go. And then something else. Thick, black, acrid smoke pouring out of the air conditioning vents. And a sound from somewhere, an airplane diving. Every pilot remembers with horror the smell of burning oil from a plane out of control. It hit us way back and deep down. Some of the guys got panicked. I pushed Randy down to the floor.
Get more air down here.
Then the blowers reversed, and that smoke was sucked out quickly. And a loudspeaker cut in from nowhere.
Attention, please.
Hey, quiet down, fellas. Quiet down. Take it easy.
For the past 2 hours, you have been under close observation as a necessary part of this test. You were warned in advance the test would be rigid. As you file out past the guard, you will receive a token compensation for your time and discomfort. We now ask you all to leave, except the man who ran for the gunner. The door is now open. Thank you.
Looks like you got the job, Major.
Looks like I'm going to shove it right back in their faces, Randy.
Well, so long.
Yeah. So long, Randy. Take it easy.
Your name, please.
Well, I hardly expected to find a blonde at the bottom of this.
You will come with me, please.
Don't give me orders, Blondie. I just want to see the guy responsible for this. Then I'm getting out of here.
I take it you have lost interest in contributing to the world benefit.
That what it said in the ad? Well, whatever your lofty purpose, I don't like cold-blooded cruelty.
Unfortunately, personal feelings cannot enter into these steps toward our objectives.
Then your objectives are wrong.
You will be better able to judge that when you know what they are.
I don't think I'm interested. And if I may have a personal feeling, callousness is unattractive enough in a man.
Neither your feelings nor mine will matter in this project. Major, I understand that it was.
Mr. Kenman, the war is over. Miss...
Dr. Frost.
Poetic.
I beg your pardon?
Nothing. I sometimes mutter to myself.
If it is possible for you to unlock your quite superior intellect from emotional reactions common to schoolgirls and fishwives, my senior colleague, Professor Baird, and I will attempt to convince you on the only basis that it should appeal to a mature mind. Facts.
By all means, Dr. Frost. Oh, but Professor Baird, where'd you get the notion of asking for fighter pilots?
Simple. Only one man in 10,000 was able to qualify mentally and physical for fighter training. Additional eliminations due to flunkouts, mortality in training and combat brings the total to one in 20,000. The standards we applied during the 2 hours in which we observed your every action and reaction raises the mathematical incidence of your sensory acuity to approximately one in 100,000.
I'm flattered.
You'll have greater reason to be if our experiment proves successful. You will be the only man on Earth possessed of your powers. You will be the man from tomorrow.
How do you propose to go about that?
We will first show you how we've trained other individuals. Dr. Frost, will you proceed with the demonstration?
Come in, Mr. Logan. Mr. Logan, have you ever been in this part of the laboratories before?
No.
Would you describe it, please?
It is a rectangular room, 40 by 20.
The ceiling is 18 and a half feet high. There's a desk 12 feet from me, slightly to my right. There are two people seated at it. One has just risen.
That will be all. Thank you, Mr. Logan.
Well, Mr. Kenman?
Well, it'd be very impressive if any schoolboy with normal vision couldn't do as well.
Agreed. Mr. Logan is totally blind.
Looking back now, I can hardly believe my own impressions. A blind man was followed by a deaf mute, then by a paraplegic who'd lost all sense of touch and smell. The demonstrations were incredible.
Not one of these persons possessed physical senses above the average. The deprivation of one sense or another, in the case of the blind or the deaf man, stimulated nature's desire to compensate for the loss.
But what are you trying to prove?
That man has powers even now that are beyond his comprehension. We wish to explore those powers. Suppose one nearly perfect man, with superior sensory perception to begin with, could develop the extension of his five senses to the maximum degree we've just observed. What do you think would happen?
I don't know.
Neither do we. But it is our conviction that this man would also acquire a new sense, a sixth sense, that would endow him with a power never dreamed of before. Don't you think it's a dimension worth exploring?
Maybe. How could anybody accomplish that?
By training. By producing the circumstances that surround the blind man, the deaf man, and the handicapped. You would have to agree to cut yourself off from the outside world for 3 years. You would spend 6 months living in a pitch-dark laboratory. You would sleep, eat, function in a world of darkness.
We will use various sound devices to train and measure your hearing responses. After that, 6 months will be devoted to simulating the world of the deaf-mute, and so on.
You will be paid $20,000 at the end of the 3 years. All the necessities of living will be provided during that time. Then a test will be made, and if our predictions are realized, you will be signed for an additional 5 years at $20,000 per year. Dr. Frost will be in charge of the training program. Do you wish to undertake it?
That's a pretty serious move. I'd like to think about it.
You have all the facts clearly, Mr. Kenman. We would like a decision now.
You think feeling might enter into my considerations, Doctor? That what you're afraid of?
Afraid? Fear is merely an emotion, Mr. Kenman. I have learned to control all my emotions.
I wonder.
I beg your pardon?
I was muttering again. What I meant to say is I agree to undertake your experiment.
We will return to Escape in just a moment, but first, forest fires, 9 out of every 10, are made by man. So redouble your efforts to eliminate forest fires. Crush out every cigarette. Break matches in two and grind them with your fingers. Douse down campfires and turn them over until no ember remains. Save a fortune in property and save human lives.
Redouble your efforts, Lisa. Here's a word you don't hear too often, redouble.
I'm not even sure that is a word.
Redouble your efforts. Well, it's like double your efforts, redouble your efforts. It's twice as many efforts.
I still don't think that's a word.
Redouble your efforts.
I don't know. I never heard that.
That's the first portion of Escape with The Man from Tomorrow, starring Larry Dobkin from 1953.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, should we redouble our efforts to listen to Escape?
Let's re-redouble.
Let's re-re-redouble?
No, just re-re.
All right, let's
just
do it.
Two re.
Let's listen to the conclusion to The Man from Tomorrow now on Escape.
And now, back to Escape. I was given 2 days to settle my affairs, such as they were. It meant saying goodbye to my landlady and packing a bag. And then I reported back to Scientific Associates, to Dr. Frost of the beautiful face and figure, all ice, and Professor Baird, tall, quiet, and clinical.
I was led into a pitch-dark room, blacker than the blackest night. It was to be my home for 6 months. It had a bed, bathroom, closets. All I had to do was find them. I won't waste time telling you what that was like. Just close your eyes tight and try to find your way around a room that's familiar to you, and you'll get the idea. I was still stumbling around 3 weeks later when I reported for my daily training with Dr. Frost in the adjoining laboratory, which was even blacker if possible.
Are you hurt?
No, you wouldn't care if I broke my leg.
There is a chair nearby.
I know, I just fell over it. No. Oh.
We can begin as soon as you're settled.
Yeah. Lucky it's so dark. I'd have to apologize for wearing my pajamas.
Don't you like dressing?
Oh, I love it. When I can find my pants.
Today's exercise will be recognition of pure tones. Here is an example. That is 1,000 cycles, or 1,000 vibrations per second, stripped of all harmonics. What would you say that was?
Oh, 1,100.
It is 1,500 cycles. Now, please tell me when you begin to hear the next tone and what the frequency is.
I couldn't make the slightest dent in that glacial reserve. Tried to match her at her own game for a while, but she loved it, and I'm human. Anyway, at the end of the 6 month, I could ramble through the whole place and never stub my toe. It was amazing how you learn to sense things in the dark and what your ears could do. 800. Oh, 4,000.
Good. Excellent. Mr. Kenman, your threshold of hearing is 20 decibels greater than the average ear. That's very good.
Oh, Dr. Frost, I can't see you, but do I detect a note of enthusiasm in your voice?
Satisfaction, perhaps, Mr. Kenman. The experiment
Dr.
so far...
Dr. Frost, have you ever let yourself go?
I'm not nearly so naive as you assume. Nor have any of your innuendos or mumblings for the past 6 months escaped me. I told you in the beginning that neither your feelings nor mine would have any bearing on
you
this
You haven't
project.
Answered my question.
I am fully aware of the nature of biological stresses.
In a scientific way, of course.
What distinguishes man from the animal is his understanding of these stresses, but mostly his control.
Control is a traffic cop with a stop sign, Doctor, but eventually the traffic has to go somewhere.
I can understand the frustration of your masculine ego, especially in this enforced loneliness of the experiment.
Thank you.
But we have only begun. We have 2 years or more to go. The first phase is highly successful. As a scientist, I am very pleased.
Strange. My hearing is so good that I have yet to hear your heartbeat. Then there was light again, but no hearing. They devised some newfangled earplugs, and I began 6 months of silence. 6 months of being deaf as a doorknob. Deaf, but not quite deaf, because I began to see sounds, to feel sounds, like waves against my skin. I began to hear with my body, with my pores. Have you ever touched a sound? Ever seen thunder? You get so you can look at sounds, almost see the waves they make, trembling in the air. And have you ever tried silence? Not saying a word, not a syllable for an hour, a day. I tried it for 6 months, until all the unsaid words piled up inside my head clung like unborn sounds at the back of my throat. Whoever said silence is golden never felt the lump of lead that accumulates inside you. Silence. Then the 6 months ended, and I felt the vibrations of her footsteps down the long hall. And I saw the door opening. A split second before you would normally see it open. For my eyes were my ears, and they were a jump ahead of what they'd ever been before. I saw her lips move, and I could read every word.
In a moment, you will hear again. In just a moment.
Then she removed the fancy earplugs, and the little canyon I'd been living in widened to a continent.
Can you hear now? Nod to me or raise your finger when you can hear the sound of my voice.
Oh, I heard you 5 minutes ago.
Were the plugs defective?
No, I read your lips. Incidentally, I take it it's okay for me to talk now.
Of course.
Have I been a good boy? Have I done everything you wanted?
So much so, Mr. Kenman, that we're giving you a few days' rest before we begin your training for taste and touch.
Can I do anything I want?
Anything. Within reason.
I'd like to have a drink. Strangely enough, I'd like to have you join me.
Perhaps that can be arranged.
Do you have a first name, or are you only a title followed by Frost, huh? Followed by a long string of degrees.
My first name is Jessica.
Jessica? Oh, that's more like it. Jessica. Jessica. After all that silence, it's good just to say a woman's name.
Well, until the experiment is completely over, Mr. Kenman, it had better remain Dr. Frost.
Okay. Dr. Jessica Frost, plus degrees. But when I get to take you out for a drink as a normal human being and not as a guinea pig, let's just go to a cocktail bar where they don't cheat.
Cheat?
No. You ask for a particular brand, this bartender pours out a few drops of it and then fills the rest of the jigger with some of that cheap stuff behind the bar.
How do you know?
Oh, I've been trained in these little subtleties of life by a mastermind. For one thing, I can spot the different gurgling sounds of the bottles. And then, too, I seem to have an uncanny knack these days of seeing around corners.
Good, good.
Well, despite the watered-down booze, I give you a toast. To you.
You've been very cooperative about this. Mr. Kenman, I want you to know that I like you very much.
Well, now I'm sure the experiment is a success because I've developed a sixth sense. I distinctly heard a lovely lady saying, I like you very much, and that couldn't possibly have been you. I rather enjoyed the touch tests. It was one area I'd never realized held such hidden powers. After a few months, my fingertips knew the difference between crystal and diamonds. I could tell if you had a suntan merely by touching your cheek. And as for the taste test, food suddenly became a symphony concert. Sourness had many degrees. Sweetness had a range as wide as the spectrum of a rainbow. And then all of my highly developed senses brought on a new perception, something over and beyond, something added to the rest, more than a summation of all the senses. Did you ever swerve the steering wheel of your car suddenly without knowing why, and then you realized the move saved your life? Or one day you thought of an old friend whom you hadn't seen or communicated with in years, and then you found a letter from him in the box that morning? Coincidence? Black magic? I once thought so. I didn't anymore. I had a knowledge beyond knowledge.
Sit down, Mr. Kim.
Thank you.
Your period of training has been completed. We've taken the final tests, and we've decided to retain you. Will you execute the contract, please, Mr. Kenman? It's the arrangement as decided. $20,000 a year for the next 5 years. Is anything wrong, Mr. Kenman?
No, nothing wrong. Not now.
Mr. Kenman, what are you doing?
Obviously, I'm not signing it.
Why?
Because I'm afraid.
What is there to be afraid of?
Of myself, Professor. Of what I know now, what I'm going to know in the future. Of what you and Dr. Frost may ask me to do.
Afraid to make contribution to scientific progress? Undreamed of progress?
Professor, remember the sixth sense you gave me. Do you know what I can see? I can see beyond the test tubes and the telescopes, all your theories and experiments. And I don't see one important thing. I don't see happiness. Only fear in falling buildings. That's all I see coming out of my super sense.
I suppose, then, that you think that all my work, our work, is to go to death and destruction?
It might.
That's not fair.
Isn't it? What happens if I sign the contract? Who makes the decisions?
These are things I can't honestly answer.
I know. That's what I mean. It might be out of your hands, then. Governments would pay billions for me. Our own country would guard me like Fort Knox. I would be the most valuable thing in the world. Alive, even more valuable for some people dead. But a thing, not a man. That's not going to be for me. Not that way.
All this work, everything we've done doesn't mean anything, then. It's all for nothing.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I guess you picked the wrong man for the job.
What are you going to do now?
Pack my things, go away. I don't know where, it doesn't really matter. Jessica, I probably won't see you again before I go. Thanks for everything. And I'm sorry you feel that I've let you down. So long.
Oh, I was just going to...
Try to talk me out of it.
No. Yes, I was, but not anymore.
Oh. I'm very glad you changed your mind.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. Not yet. Kind of funny. Going out of here almost the way I came. One suitcase, hat and coat. Only difference I have... I've got all the knowledge of the world up here. I don't know what I'll do with it. I haven't been able to think. Not clearly. I know one thing, though. There are a lot of things I can try.
What?
Cancer, heart disease, a dozen other things.
Yes.
Might not be bad for a start.
Oh, that's not bad for a start. Do you think you might need someone to help?
Yes. Yes, I think I might.
I've talked to Professor Baird. I think perhaps he understands.
Does he?
Yes. It's a little uncomfortable for a woman. I'm not supposed to say anything until you do. You already know what I'm thinking, don't you?
Let's be old-fashioned. I love you. Will you come with me?
Yes. I love you, too.
I know. Come on, let's go.
Under the direction of Anthony Ellis, Escape has brought you The Man from Tomorrow by Irving Reese, starring Lawrence Dobkin as Dix. Featured in the cast were Vivi Janis, Edgar Berrier, Kurt Martell, Jack Carroll, and Barney Phillips. The special music for Escape was composed and conducted by Leith Stevens.
That is Escape, going back to August 23rd, 1953, with The Man from Tomorrow, starring Larry Dobkin, and a great cast in there. Also, a sustained show is heard on CBS. Vivi Janis, we had William Conrad, Barney Phillips, Edgar Berrier. These are some of the greatest names of all of supporting radio on the West Coast, Lisa. Some of these guys and gals. Hope you enjoyed Escape. All right, Lisa Wolf, we still have a whole nother hour of our show right after the news, and we have Dragnet in that hour. Jack Webb stars as Sergeant Joe Friday in a program called The Big Tooth. And the way you love to brush your teeth, you should really enjoy this show.
I am in good company over here with the brushing teeth thing.
Yeah, it's a good episode, Dragnet. I know, Lisa's a big brusher. That's something we have in common.
That's true.
Both brush a lot.
We do, and we floss, and we go to the dentist a whole lot.
Yeah, and you know...
I mean, just for cleaning and polishing.
Years ago, when I first met Lisa, she told me about the water pick, right?
Yes.
I didn't have a water pick.
Like a flosser, water pick, teeth flosser.
You know, with the water, and you just Man, that changed my whole life.
Yeah, I changed your life.
You changed my life.
You light up my life.
You.
Here we go.
Oh, wait. That was Boone. What's her name?
Yeah, Pat Boone.
No, it wasn't
Debbie Boone.
Debbie Boone. So close.
The man behind the curtain.
I was so close.
Wow. You missed it by a lot.
That much. Just one letter off. So, all right, stick around. Roger, Waterpik. Did you ever hear of it?
Yes. I never had one. I got two of them. I redoubled my eyes. never did a Waterpik. I have one of those electronic brushes.
Those are good.
I have a supersonic brush.
The kind that has the two, they go different directions, and the two spinner parts on it, and I just love it.
Mine's ultrasonic. You don't even see it move, but it's moving.
Yeah. Oh,
really?
Yeah.
I think if the person, the man or woman who owns the company Waterpik, if they're listening, they should be our main sponsor.
They should be. Absolutely.
One of our sponsors, because we really love the water.
You know, you should get that bell that Lou uses.
Ding.
Yeah, every time you say Waterpik.
Ding.
Because I'm sure Waterpik is listening.
I'm sure they are.
Well, I got to tell you, Lisa, thanks for changing my life for the better.
Well, you light up my life.
And then you know what? Then we got Mike into it, too. Mike Estella. He went and bought a Waterpik, and he loves it.
Wow.
Yeah, so everyone we tell
Do you have
them.
Waterpik fights?
We don't live in the same home, so that's a definite no.
People think we all live together. We don't live together.
We don't even like each other.
We live separate in separate homes, all of us.
Separate lives. That's a song, too.
Separate lives. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's all a song.
When Lisa came here, she was
life
yawning
is a song
and
we're
yawning.
Singing.
You're not yawning anymore. Lisa
I'm not
was,
tired anymore.
Lisa was yawning
she
when
got
she got
nap
here.
Today?
She was like,
no.
I can hear the show.
No, I did not say that. That's not at all what I said.
And then she's all chipper and...
That's because Roger's here.
Hey, you know what, Roger?
Wow, that's a little heavy responsibility. Thank you very much.
Yes, it is.
Roger, we filmed a Facebook Live video.
We did another one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You go check it out. How do they do that?
You go to WGN Radio Theater and scroll down, and it's right there.
You have to go to Facebook first, though.
Yeah, you have to like us, too. We're at 2514 or something.
Yeah, DJ Cash filmed it. She asked us a question.
Yeah.
And we answered it.
And we answered it. So go check it out. Lisa's favorite song right there.
This is really good. You got it.
It's her favorite tune. Right?
Right.
This is like her life story.
Yeah.
It's 9 o'clock on a Saturday.
There was there's a piano bar in Pat O'Brien's, which is in downtown New Orleans.
Tulane.
Right. There's a little piano bar as part of Pat O'Brien's.
Yeah.
And the guy would sit and play the piano, and we'd give him money, and he would play this, and we'd sing
and dance and cry
and laugh and just enjoy life.
I don't think I can go this high.
That was good.
It sounds like it?
Yeah, you sound like Billy Joel. You're like, sad and sweet and
I might get a record contract out of this. What do you think? If there's any record...
This makes me more inviting.
I need a new gig.
I don't think singing's going to be the avenue for you.
Yeah, it might be better than radio.
Sing us a song. How about that? Sing us a song tonight. I'll do it like...
Mood for...
Like a baritone.
You got us feeling all right.
That's good.
Do you know where the record's going to appear? On the back of cereal boxes.
Yeah.
All right, so singer I'm not, okay? A singer I'm not, right?
Definitely not.
Thank you for playing my song.
That's her song right there. All right, in this hour, it's Dragnet with Jack Webb, and it's brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity School. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film Skyscraper about a U.S. war veteran who has to rescue his family trapped inside a skyscraper. Wow, that sounds crazy.
That's not the person. I don't have that person here. I have a female.
Yeah, that's correct.
Oh, okay. It's a female?
It is.
Okay.
I said this actress stars in the upcoming film Skyscraper.
Sorry. All right. So.
Don't confuse me.
I'm trying not to. 312-981-7200.
The winner gets a Twilight Zone 4-CD set, a fantastic volume.
Very good. This actress played Susie in a very cool film, Wild Things.
Wow. Talk about paranoid. Take a look around us, Sam. You're going to have to teach me how to drive this thing before I can get rid of you.
Did you ever see this movie?
I know.
Wild Things? Oh, yeah. Really good. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. Who is that actress?
We are playing Celebrity Scoop, and we're going to play that movie clip one more time.
Wow. Talk about paranoid. Take a look around us, Sam. You're going to have to teach me how to drive this thing before I can get rid of you.
All right. We've got Kelly on the line. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good.
Good, so you know who that actress is.
Yes, it's Neve Campbell.
Neve Campbell is right. I did not see the movie.
I dated her.
Susie in Wild Things. You dated Neve or Kelly?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Just
the
yes.
The answer is yes.
Well, Kelly's the big winner here, and she has won the Twilight Zone 4 CD set. And, Carl, maybe you can talk to Kelly and go over there and listen to some Twilight Zones.
Yeah. Kelly, you'll like the Twilight Zone. I think you will enjoy it very much.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I love listening to your show.
Oh, thanks so much. We love that you're listening.
And thank you for calling in. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Have a good night.
You too. Good night. All right, Lisa, are you ready for Dragnet?
Always.
Okay, this was a fantastic series. Came to radio in 1949, lasted all the way to 1957. These were true crime stories of closed cases from the LAPD, and it starred Jack Webb as Sergeant Joe Friday. Each case was detailed from start to finish, and Friday narrated the action. I got to tell you, I can listen to Dragnet. I can listen to like 5 episodes of Dragnet a day. They're so interesting. They're so realistic. And then it was on television for years or movies. This was one of the best of the golden age of radio. We have an episode for you now from February 15th, 1953. This is called The Big Tooth. Here's part one of Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned the homicide detail. A young woman tells you that her mother has disappeared. There's no trace of her whereabouts. Foul play is suspected. Your job? Investigate. Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Tuesday, August 5th. It was hot in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Frankie. We were on the way out from the office. It was 10:46 a.m. when we got to 4298 North Estrella Street. The front door.
Hi.
Yeah, sure is.
Yes, Mrs. What's her name?
Randall, Ella Randall.
Mm-hmm. She say what this was about?
She said that her mother disappeared. She wanted to talk to us about it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
Ms. Randall?
Yes, that's right.
Police officers, ma'am.
Oh, yes, come in, won't you?
Thanks, ma'am.
Or not, I think I'll leave the door open. Hope the flies don't come in.
My name's Friday, Mrs. Randall. This is my partner, Frank Smith.
How do you do?
How do you do, ma'am? Could you tell us just what it is you want to see us about?
Well, of course. Sit down, won't you?
Oh, thank you, Miss Randall.
Would you like some tea or something? I have some ready in the kitchen.
No, thanks.
Just what was it about your mother, Mrs. Randall?
Now that you're here, I guess maybe I could be wrong about it. I was so sure.
Well, just what is it, ma'am?
Well, Mama's gone. I don't know how long it's been, but she isn't with Papa.
Well, what's your mother's name, Miss Randall?
Bertha Schroeder, my father's hand.
Uh-huh. Well, what makes you think there might be something wrong? You said on the phone that you were pretty sure that something had happened to her.
Well, yes, I guess I ought to start at the beginning. It's kind of a dull story, but maybe it's the best way.
All right, ma'am.
You sure you wouldn't like a glass of iced tea?
No, thanks, ma'am. Thanks, just the same.
Mind if I get some? Just take a minute.
All right.
Yeah, it's a nice place, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Sure decorated nice. Hey, look at those trivets.
What?
Trivets. Those little things over the fireplaces, brass.
Oh, yeah.
Faithman ones, some of those. Used to use them to hold irons, you know, they get hot. And put them on the ironing board so they won't burn the cloth.
Put them on those things.
Yeah.
I brought a couple extra glasses in case you decided you wanted some.
Well, if you just go ahead and restore them, Miss Randall.
Yes, well, to understand it, really, you'd have to know Papa.
Mm-hmm.
He came over to this country when he was just a boy, only about 16 or so. Landed here and couldn't speak more than a dozen words of English. Went to work in New York. Worked as a construction man. Worked hard. Met Mama there, and they got married. Right after that, they moved out here. Bought a house, and Papa went into business for himself.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, maybe it was the life he'd had when he got here. I don't know, but he always treated Mama like she was so much dirt. Mean. Time went on, he got meaner to her. Remember when us kids were in school, he used to yell at her all the time. Get in the mood, and he wouldn't talk to any of us for days at a time.
Is that so?
I never knew how Mama took it. She never said anything. Just stand there and let him scream at her. And when he was finished, she'd just kind of shrug her shoulders and take his kids out of the house. Walk around for a while and then go back to the house. By that time, Papa was so mad he wouldn't talk to anyone.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Well, all of us kids married young. I got married when I was 16. The rest of the kids weren't much older than that. Papa didn't want us around after that. He said for us to get out and make our own way. He said that we had to. So there's no reason that we shouldn't. You sure you don't want some of this?
No, thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much, ma'am. Would you mind going ahead, Miss Randall?
Yeah, yes. A couple of months ago, I tried to call Mama. The operator told me that the phone had been disconnected.
Beg your pardon?
The operator told me that the phone had been disconnected when I tried to get hold of Mama.
I see.
Well, I waited a couple of days. You know, I figured that maybe she'd call me.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, she didn't. You see, once we were out of the house, none of us went back. Papa's retired, and none of us wanted to see him. It's a terrible thing to say, Mr. Friday, but it's true.
Ma'am?
We all hated him, all of us kids, for what he'd done to us, the beatings and all. But most for what he'd done to Mama. She was only 52, and she looked like she was 92. It was terrible the way he treated her.
I see.
And like I said, we'd never go over there, but Mama came to see us whenever she could. She'd come over, visit for a little bit, you know, talk about the kids and things.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I didn't hear from her, and I got a little worried that maybe she was sick. She was. I know that Papa wouldn't tell us, so I went over to the old house and I rang the bell. I was kind of braced because I thought I'd see Papa and there'd be an argument, but there wasn't.
Ma'am?
No argument. Oh. Papa didn't answer the door. Some young woman answered it, and I asked if I could see Mrs. Schroeder. Right away, I knew there was something wrong.
Well, how was that, ma'am?
Well, I could see inside the front door. The living room had all been changed around. There was new furniture. It looked like the walls had been painted, too.
Mm-hmm. What did the woman say when you asked for your mother?
She said they didn't live there anymore. Said that they'd rented the house, you know, and that they'd been living there for the past month.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at first, I don't think I believed her. I asked her who rented the house to her, and she said Papa did. Then I asked her where he was.
What'd she say to that?
Well, she gave me his address. I went over there to talk to him. It was a little tiny apartment just off La Brea. He said that Mama was gone. I asked him where she'd gone, and he said that she was on a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know him well enough to know that he'd never let her go away. Be no one to darn his socks and keep the house clean.
Yeah?
I wanted to know where she'd gone in this vacation. He said back to the old country. Said she wanted to see her family. He said that they'd gotten a letter from her sister that she was sick and wanted to see Mama.
Uh-huh.
Well, right then I called him a liar. Told him right to his face that he was lying. I kind of thought that he'd hit the ceiling, but he didn't. He just smiled and said that I'd no call to say anything like that. He asked me why I said it.
Well, what was that? He thought that he hit what?
Well, I thought that he'd hit the ceiling when I said that to him, when I called him a liar, I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I told him that if Mama had left, she'd have written, maybe not to me, but to one of the kids. I called around, and when I didn't hear from her, none of the kids had either. They were all worried about her, too.
I see. Well, what did he say to that?
He said he couldn't understand it, said that he'd gotten a letter, that he'd gotten it not more than a day or so before, that she'd arrived safe and was having a wonderful time.
This was a letter?
Yes, this was a letter he got from Mama. Well, I told him I thought he was lying. And he said that he'd show me the letter.
Well, did he?
Well, yeah, he showed me the letter, but he wouldn't show me the envelope, just the letter. He said he'd thrown the envelope away.
Well, was the letter from your mother, ma'am?
Well, sort of from the words it was. Told all about her trip and how she was enjoying herself. Said that she was with her sister and that she was getting better. And then she went on to tell how much she missed Papa and all.
Uh-huh.
Well, right away, I could tell that it wasn't Mama's handwriting. She never wrote that letter.
Beg your pardon?
I said that I knew it wasn't Mama's writing on that letter.
Yeah, well...
Well, that's when I thought about calling you. Then later I remembered something, and then I made up my mind about calling you.
Well, what was that, Ms. Randall?
Well, Mama only had one sister living. She died 3 years ago.
11:13 a.m. We continued to talk to Ella Ram. She told us that she was sure that her mother would not have gone off of her own free will. She said that when she last saw Mrs. Schroeder, she appeared to be in good health and in good spirits. We got the names and addresses of the other children in the Schroeder family. We also got the address of the Schroeder relatives in Europe. Ellen Randall told us that we could find her father at the apartment, and she gave us the address. 12:15 p.m. Frank and I drove over to see him.
This is ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous.
Well, maybe so, sir, but we'd like to see the letter that came from your wife.
Officer, I'd like very much to show it to you. Really, I would, but I can't.
Why not, sir?
For the reason that I haven't got it anymore. I destroyed it, burned it a couple of days ago.
Who's your wife staying with, sir?
It was her sister.
Uh-huh. Well, from what we can find out, sir, your wife's sister died 3 years ago. How could your wife be staying with her?
All right, I suppose I might as well tell you about it. Doesn't seem to be any other way.
All right, sir. Go right ahead.
First off, my wife is not in the old country. She's not with her sister. What you heard is true.
Uh-huh.
Officer, what I have to tell you is very hard to say. I find it hard to find the right words.
That's all right, sir. You just go ahead.
We've been married for 30 years. 30 years, man and wife, and then she did this. Almost broke my heart, officers. Is one of you married?
Oh, yes, sir. My partner here is.
Then you'd know what I mean. You'd know how it is.
Sir?
She left me. Packed her things and left. Didn't give me any reason. Just said she didn't want to be my wife anymore. He said she didn't want to share my roof. Just left. 30 years. All that time and she left.
What kind of terms were you and your wife on, sir?
What do you mean, this terms?
Well, did you and your wife get along all right? Were you happy?
Certainly. As I said, we were married 30 years.
Yes, sir, I understand that, but did you ever have any quarrels?
Sergeant, all married people have quarrels. Maybe the house isn't clean, maybe dinner isn't big enough, maybe the children get too loud. All married couples have quarrels. It's part of living together.
Well, from what we understand, sir, some of the arguments you and your wife had were pretty serious.
The people who said that are liars.
They seem pretty sure.
Liars, that's what they are. Oh, sometimes maybe I forget myself, get a little loud, but serious, never.
How'd you get along with your children, Mr. Schroeder?
My children?
Yes, sir, that's right. How'd you get along with them?
All right, they were a little wild. All the children over here are like that, wild. They don't respect their elders, but I got along good.
There seems to be a difference of opinion on that, too, sir. We've heard that you and your children weren't on too friendly terms.
And you believe this? You think if this is true? Mr. Fining, Mr. Smith, these were my own flesh and blood. I loved them, still do. Maybe that sounds hard to believe. I can imagine what you've heard. I know. I've heard about this before. I know who told you. You didn't think I'd know, but I do. It was Ella, wasn't it? Wasn't it?
Who told us isn't important, sir.
But it is. You see, this is very hard for me to say. 30 years married, and it is all a mistake. I knew it from the start. She was a shrew, Mr. Friday. I knew it right away, a shrew.
Sir?
My wife, Bertha, almost from the day we were married, she was a nag. All I wanted in life was to do a day's work and come home and read the paper, maybe have a pipe of tobacco. Rest, work, and have my home. Maybe someday when the children were grown, they'd say, Papa was good. He gave us a good house, and he was good. That's all I wanted.
Yes, sir?
Bertha didn't want that. Always wanted more. For the children, she said. When I wouldn't kill myself at work, she'd get angry, talk loud to me. All I wanted was peace. When the children came along, she taught them just like her.
How do you mean?
Taught them what a mean man I was. Turned them against me. My own children. Taught them to hate their father. Their own father.
Yes, sir. Well, why didn't you tell your children that your wife left you?
No, Mr. Friday, I couldn't. This would break their hearts. They might hate me, but I don't want them to hate their mother. I couldn't do that. The Lord would never forgive me for that.
Have you heard from your wife at all since she left?
Not a word. I made up that letter so the children wouldn't find out. I couldn't have that.
Did she take any money with her, would you know that?
Yes, she did. We have a joint account at the bank 2 blocks over. She made a large withdrawal the day she left.
Well, Mr. Schroeder, why'd you rent your house?
It was all by myself. The house was full of Bertha. All the things were hers. Everywhere I looked, I saw her. It hurt me, Mr. Smith. I had to get out. So I came here. It's not much, but I can read the paper and I'll send her a pipe of tobacco. It's peaceful. It's all I need.
What'd you do with your wife's personal effects?
I don't think I understand, Sergeant.
Her clothes, the furniture from the house, things like that.
They're in storage. I had some men come out and take all of it away, stored it away. And thought that maybe someday Bertha would come back and we could take up where we left off.
Yes, sir. Could you give us the name of the storage company where you left the furniture?
Certainly. It's out on Pico. I can give you the address. Is that important?
No, sir, not really. It's just something we ought to check.
Don't you think it might be better if you told your daughter about all this or about what's happened?
No, Mr. Smith, it wouldn't prove anything, nothing at all.
Well, that's the way you want it, so there's nothing we can do about it.
It's better, Mr. Friday, believe me, I know. You say hate me, there's not much I can do about it, but I don't want to bring him any unhappiness. I couldn't do that.
Yes, sir.
I'm 65 years old, Mr. Friday. I worked hard all that time, harder than most men. Had four children. They're all grown, they have families of their own. All this, and I've got nothing. Nothing but lonely days and empty nights.
Yes.
It's an awful thing, just awful.
Sir?
To work all your life and have nothing to show for it.
That's the first portion of Dragnet with the Big Tooth, starring Jack Webb. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
I want to thank many listeners who have been ordering my book. I have a new book out. It's called The Top 100 Classic Radio Shows. It's a 224-page coffee table book that chronicles the top 100 classic radio shows like Sherlock Holmes and Jack Benny and Burns and Allen and The Whistler, Suspense, many, many more. And 78 shows that are in this book, you can just log on to a special website, digitally download an episode of those shows. There's also three CDs in the back of the book that have six classic radio shows. And the entire book, Big Coffee Table Book, is only $29.99 plus $5.99 shipping and handling. And I would be happy to personalize and autograph it for you absolutely free. All you have to do is go to our website, WGNRadiotheater.com. That's WGNRadiotheater.com, and there will be a pop-up that pops up, and if you are interested in the book, I'd love to send you one for maybe it's a birthday present or a Christmas gift or a Hanukkah or a Kwanzaa or a Thanksgiving gift. Right?
Or just for fun for yourself.
Yeah, I think our listeners would enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited about it. It was number two on Amazon last week. Did you know that, Lisa?
Only because you told
me. Yeah, I was excited about it, so I sent her a text of it. Number
but
two on Amazon.
It is a fantastic book, and anybody listening to this radio show would appreciate the book. It is full of pictures and information, and it's a coffee table book, so you can browse through it. It's not like a novel. It's different. You can spend 5 minutes on it or an hour going through it. It's fantastic.
Thank you very much. Lisa ordered a couple of them for her family and friends.
Sure did.
I appreciate that, Lisa. All right, it is available, the top 100 classic radio shows, and you can get it at Amazon or any Barnes & Noble or wherever, but the place that you can get it autographed and personalized by me is at our website, WGNRadioTheater.com. All right, now, the conclusion to Dragnet.
1:37 p.m., we got the address of the storage company from Henry Schroeder, and then Frank and I left to go back to the office. At this point, we had two stories. Both of them could be true. Both of them could be lies. There was no way of knowing. In the meantime, it was merely a matter of checking. Until it could be proved one way or the other, there was little action we could take. 2:15 p.m., Frank and I checked back into the office, and I put in a call to the storage house.
Yes, sir. I'll wait while you're checking,
I don't know, Joe. Sure seems like the old guy is telling the truth.
Well, we check this out, we'll know one way or the other.
Such a nice little guy. Seems hard to believe that he'd do anything wrong.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, what was that?
Uh-huh.
Could you tell me when? What was the name?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Uh-huh. Thanks very much. That's Joe Friday. F-R-I-D-E. Yeah. That's right. Michigan 5211, extension 2521. Right. All right. Thanks again.
How about it?
He stored the furniture, all right.
Yeah.
They remembered him. Talked to him a couple of weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
Told him to sell everything. We drove out to the storage house and talked to the owner. He said that Schroeder had called them out to pack the furniture and then he ordered it stored. A week later, he called back and told them to dispose of all the furnishings and personal effects. We called Schroeder's bank and they told us that there'd been no large withdrawals on the date of her disappearance. Also, she'd drawn no checks since. We got in touch with the other children and they verified their sister's story. They all said that the father was hard to live with and had on several occasions struck Mrs. Schroeder. They told us that it was possible that she had left her husband, but that she would certainly have gotten in touch with one of them if she had. They said that as far as they knew, Mrs. Schroeder was in good health, and she was in good condition mentally. One of the daughters said that they were planning on a shopping trip to buy school clothes for one of the grandchildren. The woman went on to say that as far as she knew, Mrs. Schroeder would not have left without saying something to her about not being able to keep the appointment. We got in touch with Ella Randall. She said that she would like to accompany us when we talked to the neighbors of the Schroeder woman. She said that she could point out her mother's friends and that she would be able to trace her mother's movements about the neighborhood for us. 4:15 p.m. We picked her up. We talked to the neighbors and they told us of hearing loud voices coming from the house. They said that Mr. Schroeder was always angry at his wife, and he made no attempt to hide it. 7:30 p.m. We went on to talk to the people who had rented the Schroeder home.
Come on in.
Thank you very much, Mr. Armstrong. It's my partner, Frank Smith. This is Mrs. Randall.
Yes, Mrs. Randall, I've met before. How are you, Mrs. Randall?
How are you, Mr. Armstrong?
Well, what's this all about?
We'd like to ask you some questions about the Schroeders, if we could.
Well, Mrs. Randall here would be able to answer them better for you. They're her parents.
Well, yes, sir. We'd like some information from you. Good.
All right. Go ahead. Don't think there's much I can tell you.
Did you see Mrs. Schroeder when you rented the house?
No, come to think about it, I didn't. Mr. Schroeder talked about her, but I didn't see her when we took the house.
Uh-huh. How did Mr. Schroeder act when you rented the place?
I don't think I understand.
Well, did he seem upset? Anything at all unusual about him?
As a matter of fact, there was.
What was that, sir?
Well, the house was kind of old. You know, paint missing from some of the woodwork. Some of the paper was a little faded, and we asked him if he planned to fix it up before we moved it. You know, if he'd foot the bill.
Yes, sir, we understand.
Well, right away, I kind of expected an argument. He just seemed like that kind of a guy, you know, who wouldn't spend a nickel if he didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like that. A smile, said anything that we wanted, he'd have done. Real nice. Sure hasn't caused any trouble. Of course, there's no reason for him to. We pay the rent on time, take care of the lawn, the flowers. I think we're pretty good tenants.
Sure is a difference. Never looked like this when we lived here. I remember that Mama would ask him to paint the place a little. Always raised the roof. Said there wasn't any reason to do it. Said to wait until the kids were grown and appreciated a house.
Not like that with us.
Well, he was with his own family. Even when we were gone, after we left the house, he said that there wasn't any reason to fix the place up. Said that Mama and him were the only people who ever saw the inside of it, and it didn't matter to them.
Like I said, couldn't ask for a better landlord.
Well, I kind of hate to ask this.
Yeah.
Well, I wondered if I could see the rest of the house. I'd kind of like to see what he did to it.
Well, I guess it's okay. It won't take too long. I gotta eat pretty quick. Got a bowl tonight. Team's playing the league championship tonight.
But just it'll look. I won't keep you.
Okay. Well, you know the house.
Yes.
This is the living room. Bedroom's down the hall. This is the dining room.
Oh, pretty paper. It made Mama so happy to have this.
Here's a bath.
All new tile, just beautiful.
Yeah, it makes it nice.
Mm.
It's a master bedroom.
This was Papa's room. Sure is nice. Oh, look at the pretty curtains.
Those are ours. He said he put drapes on every one of them.
Oh.
Sally, it's a wife. She likes curtains.
Uh-huh. I do, too.
Here's this, the oldest boy.
This was Mom's room. Oh, it's just beautiful. That's a beautiful carpet.
Yeah, he put that in, too. Didn't even have to ask for that. It's own idea.
Wall-to-wall carpeting. Mama always wanted it.
The only room in the house that has it.
Do you have a cellar in this house, Mr. Armstrong?
Yeah. We use it for the freezer. Sally puts up canned goods in the summer. Keep them down there.
What if we could see it, please?
Sure, but there isn't any change down there. He didn't do anything with the cellar.
Yes, sir. It's all right, though. We'd like to see it.
Oh, sure. Like to make it fast, though. I gotta eat, you know.
Yes, sir. We understand. It won't take very long here.
Sure, it's down this way. Had to run electricity down there for the freezer. I guess he'd have done it, but it was just an extension cord. Thought about having it done permanently, but no real reason to.
I understand.
I'll go ahead and get the light.
Yes, sir. You want to wait here, Ms. Randall?
Why?
Well, no reason, ma'am. We just thought it might be better.
Well, all right. I'll wait in the living room.
All right, thank you. Come on, Frank.
Yeah.
Not very big, just room enough for the freezer and a few shelves.
Uh-huh. Cement floor, huh?
Yeah.
Frank?
Yeah?
You want to swing that light up here? I want to check something here.
Sure.
What's this room under, Mr. Armstrong? I mean, what's above it?
Let's see. That'd be the master bedroom about to there.
Uh-huh.
The room next would begin there.
Uh-huh. That'd be Mrs. Schroeder's room, wouldn't it?
Mm, from what Mrs. Randall said, yeah.
Uh-huh. You got a piece of paper, sir? I'd like to get up on the freezer. I don't want to scratch it here.
Why, something you want?
Well, I'd just like to look. Have a piece of paper, cardboard, anything, cloth?
I don't see any. Go ahead. Just don't scrunch your feet around. It'll be all right.
All right, sir. All right, Frank. Swing the light around, will you?
Yeah. What is it, Joe?
I'm not sure. You got your flash? Yeah, here you go.
Okay.
What is it? What do you see up there?
They better call the crime lab and get them out here.
What is it?
Seep through the flooring up there.
Yeah?
Looks like blood.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
p.m. The crime lab was called and they came out to go over the place. A benzidine test was run on the stains and it was proved that they were blood stains. The carpet in the bedroom was removed and additional stains were uncovered. Frank and I checked the cellar floor, but it was solid and there was no evidence that any part of it had been torn up. A preliminary check was made of the yard, but we found nothing. The next morning at 7:58 a.m. we called the crime lab. They'd finished their investigation and told us that the stains were made by human blood. 8:10 a.m. Frank and I drove out to the house to continue our investigation.
Boy, it's going to be a scorcher.
Yeah, it looks that way. Did you check that corner of the yard over there?
Yeah, doesn't look like anything's been disturbed.
Well, let's talk to the neighbors again. There's got to be an answer someplace.
Okay. You know, I'm going to tell Faye to get me some of those shirts with the holes in them.
What do you mean, holes in them?
You know, like they wear back east. Little bitty holes between the material. That way you don't get so hot.
Yeah.
Hey, wait a minute, Joe.
What?
There's something on the grass over there by the rose bed.
Oh, it's probably a locket or something one of the kids dropped. A toy, maybe.
Yeah, I'll get it. Give it back to Armstrong.
What do you got?
Piece of dental bridge work. Looks like it's been in a fire.
The crime lab was called and they went over the backyard. They checked the incinerator and under a large heap of ashes, they found several pieces of bone. They took a sample of the ash back to the lab to examine it. We got in touch with the daughter, Mrs. Randall. We got the address of Mrs. Schroeder's dentist. Frank and I drove out to talk to him. We showed him the piece of dental bridge work that we'd found, and he identified it as positively belonging to Mrs. Schroeder. He showed us the card from his files, which gave the date that he'd installed the bridge. 11:56 a.m. We called the crime lab, and Lieutenant Lee Jones told us that the ash and the particles of bone that he'd recovered could be of human origin. 12:15 p.m. We drove out to the apartment and took Henry Schroeder into custody. We talked to him in the interrogation room.
I don't understand all this. None of it makes any sense.
Well, it's pretty simple, Schroeder.
Simple? You say that I killed Bertha and you say it's simple. How can you say that? Why do you say that? You must have a reason. I told you all I know.
A couple of things you didn't tell the truth about, sir.
What?
You said that just before your wife left you, she made a large withdrawal from your account, didn't you?
That's right, she did. She did take some money.
Well, in checking your bank account, we found no record of any such withdrawal.
You've got no right to go through my bank account. You've got no right.
This is a murder investigation, Schroeder. We've got a right to clear it up.
But she did take the money. She did. You've got to believe me.
It's a little hard to do, Schroeder. Since your wife disappeared, she hasn't drawn any money out of your account. Before that, she drew checks to pay the local store bills. Now, how do you explain that?
I can't. I don't know what you're trying to say. I don't know what you're trying to get me to say.
We're trying to get you to say the truth, that's all.
But I am.
You said you put all the furniture from your house in storage. Now, is that right?
Yes, I said that.
Mm-hmm. You said you wanted to keep it in case your wife came back and you two started all over again?
Yes, that's the truth.
We checked the storage company. They told us you called them and ordered everything sold. Told him to sell it as soon as possible. Now, how do you explain that?
You're getting me so confused, I can't think.
And we checked the house, the one where you and your wife lived. We found bloodstains, lots of them. They're human blood.
I don't know.
People who live there now say that you put a carpet over the floor. Only room in the house that has a carpet. They say it was your idea.
I can't think. I don't know what you're saying.
Well, here's a report here. Take a look at it. It's a list of the things we found in your incinerator. Things that were burned. Now, do you want to read it, or do you want me to read it to you? How about it, Schroeder?
Schroeder?
I didn't mean it. 30 years. 30 years married. I didn't mean to do it. I came home late. Real late. I'd been drinking. We had words. I hit her. I don't know what happened. I knew what I was doing. I kept hitting her. Then she was dead. I didn't mean to do it. I didn't mean to. She turns the kids against me. Turned everybody against me. hurting his memory. She turned everybody against me.
I'm afraid you got it wrong, mister.
Huh?
You did that yourself.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On December 10th, trial was held in Department 87, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. Henry Rudolph Schroeder was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. He was executed in the lethal gas chamber at the State Penitentiary, San Quentin, California. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Monty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, June Whitley, Harry Bartell. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Hal Gibney. He has almost as deep a voice as I do there, right?
Yeah, Lisa? Very similar.
Yeah. That's Dragnet with a good broadcast called The Big Tooth from February 15th, 1953. Jack Webb, along with Ben Alexander in that, Hal Gibney doing the announcing. Also, George Fenneman was on that show, but we had to remove him because he was doing commercials for Chesterfield, because Chesterfield was the original sponsor on the show. But we don't air cigarette commercials on the radio, Lisa.
I'm aware of that. Not because they're unhealthy,
they don't want
but
you to
because
smoke.
They're illegal, too.
Yeah, you can't air them on radio.